Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to Football Full Circle, live right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM, channel 159. I am Ben Stevens. He is the mastermind of the pigskin. That would be Joe Lisi. And Joe, week number 6 of the National Football League ends last night in Los Angeles. It was another doozy. The Denver Broncos, in their fourth primetime game, in their first 6 games of the year, head to overtime for a second consecutive week on primetime for a second straight week, and it's the same result. They lose by 3. The Bolts, Joe, taking care of the Broncos, 19-16 in overtime. Dustin Hopkins battling through a hurt hamstring, a hurt kicking leg, makes 4 big field goals for LA yesterday, and they emerge victorious, but do not cover as a 4-point favorite. But yet again, Joe, it was not the most exciting NFL football game we have ever seen.
But it started out pretty good. You know, we saw Russell Wilson cook a little bit. He hits the big touchdown pass to start the game. They jump up 7-0. It was 13-10 at the half. And you're like, all right, no big deal. This is a pretty good first half of football. And then the second half goes, and I don't know what happened at halftime because there were no halftime adjustments. Both offenses went straight up. They couldn't convert on third down. Sloppy play. Nobody was picking up in terms of opposing edge rushers or linebackers on the edge coming off the blitz. I mean, it was absolutely pathetic in the second half, and somehow, some way, the Chargers win basically by default because it was just a turnover that really changed the landscape of that ball game. If they got the football back, Denver, I guarantee you there was no way Russell Wilson was leading his team down the field for a potential game-winning field goal because that's how bad he was in the second half. So, I mean, the Chargers, they win. They get back to 500. Now, what are they, 4-2 right now, Chargers?
4-2.
Yeah, they're looking good. I mean, better than what they did a couple of weeks ago. But at the end of the day, I think the AFC West is still up for grabs.
I think the AFC West is only controlled by the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know how you look at anything last night and feel confident, certainly not in the Broncos. I don't know how you feel inspired by anything you have seen out of the Chargers. Brandon Staley still actively hurts his team in late game management situations and how to properly manage a clock to not go to overtime and not have to survive and not have a tie. Brandon Staley is still making incredibly questionable coaching decisions. I don't care about how aggressive he is going for it on fourth down. Those are fine by me. They will eventually turn up in a positive way, in my opinion, for Los Angeles. But the inability to manage a game and simply call timeouts when it's the right time to do so, this LA team, Joe, and they're as banged up as they could possibly be. How you look at anything and don't think that, again, the AFC West Championship runs through Arrowhead for a 7th consecutive season? I'm not entirely sure, which is very different than our preseason thoughts about this AFC West. Because right now, Joe, it's the Chiefs at a minus 200 price. They entered the year as the favorites at plus 155, but the Chargers were only a couple of cents behind, 85 cents behind in total, plus 240. The Broncos were plus 260. The Raiders were 7-1. This was expected to be the most competitive, most difficult division in all of football. It has been anything but. The Broncos are 2-4. The Raiders are not very good right now either, Joe, and both have very, very long odds to win this division. The Broncos at 20-1. The Raiders behind that at 24-1. I still think, and rightfully so, the odds are backing up Kansas City here, and they should be the odds-on favorite, maybe even with a stronger minus money price to win the AFC West.
Yeah, I mean, granted, they are the front runners. Right now, they're playing as good as anybody. I just think when you look at the records right now, you look at the loss by Kansas City, even though it wasn't in the division to the Buffalo Bills, it hurts the mentality, it hurts the mindset of Patrick Mahomes and the crew. At the end of the day, I still believe that the Raiders will bounce back into form and maybe go on a heater where they can win potentially four or five games. I still like the way their defense is playing, and I agree with you about the Chargers. The problem with the Chargers is there's no consistency, right? They are up and down each and every week, and that's the problem. And that falls on Brandon Staley from an offensive perspective and, more importantly, the defensive perspective as well, because in big games, they can score points at times, right? It's the defense that doesn't take games over. They were able to do that potentially in the second half last night, but part of that was due to the inconsistency of Russell Wilson and his play. I mean, he was missing wide open wide receivers yet again.
Yep.
So we'll see how it plays out. Yeah, I agree. Right here, right now, yes, it's Kansas City. But the other three teams jockeying for number two, I still think Las Vegas is live. And again, tell me why Brandon Staley was getting all the love for Coach of the Year. How much love does the media have for this guy?
I don't understand, Joe. It's kind of crazy when you think about how this Los Angeles Chargers team always has optimism, yet really doesn't back it up in terms of what the actual ceiling can be. If the Bolts get to the playoffs for the first time in a very long time, congratulations. But truly contending for a divisional crown, I'm not so sure. And Joe, you mentioned the lack of offensive adjustments in the second half, maybe even offensive regression in a negative way. The Broncos had negative 13 passing yards in the second half in overtime. Russell Wilson, 15 of 28, a buck 88, in a touchdown, well under every one of his passing yards props from a night ago. We continue in the NFL. Up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are back on Football Full Circle, recapping the finale of week number 6 of this season before turning our attention forward. Some big news already in the NFL this week from that injury perspective that will have those big implications come this weekend slate, even starting in just a few days on a Thursday. So, Joe Lisi, a couple of closing thoughts on the Chargers and the Broncos. And let's focus on Denver, because although LA maybe not all that inspiring right now, you're right, they're above 500. Technically, in the overall record, tied with the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC West, although the Chiefs do have that tiebreaker as of right now with the advantage of beating LA week number 2. Joe, I think still, despite Denver's struggles through the early going of this season, there is still a hope that eventually Russell Wilson will look like Russell Wilson, that eventually all of the talent on Denver will figure it out. I don't think that's going to happen. The Broncos are 2-4. Their win total in the preseason was 9.5, and the over had substantial juice. It's now 7.5, and the under is juiced at -150. They were a -146 favorite, Joe, the sixth best price in the AFC to make the playoffs before the year. That price now, +460. So, Joe, I ask you, can the Broncos, can Russell Wilson, can Nathaniel Hackett maybe start to put some pieces together to become a playoff team, or is this season going to be a huge disappointment in the Mile High City?
I think it's disappointment. I watched that second half last night. He underthrew Jerry Jeudy a number of different times. Wasn't even close. I mean, the timing isn't there of Russell Wilson. He doesn't know where he wants to go with the football, whether it be the receivers being so inexperienced and not understanding how to break off routes when he's under pressure. The quarterback to wide receiver relationship just isn't there between Russell Wilson, KJ Hamler, and more importantly, Jerry Jeudy. It's just non-existent. So until that changes, they're not going to win football games. They can't run the football each and every down with Latavius Murray, Mike Boone, and obviously Melvin Gordon if he ever gets back onto the football field and can carry the football and hold on to it. So at the end of the day, what do you have? You have a methodical, ugly football team that was supposed to take the next level from the depths of the abyss to where Vic Fangio had that offense, right? Oh, we're going to run it 3 yards in a cloud of dust. They're even worse this year, I think. Yep. I don't even know. Yep. At least Fangio got them to 20 points in a game. Drew Lock at times and Teddy Bridgewater were able to throw touchdown passes. This offense is ugly. So I don't think it changes, and I think it starts at the top. Nathaniel Hackett first, Russell Wilson second, and until they fix that, Ben, I don't think it's going to change. I think, you know what? They could be maybe 5-12 this year.
Joe, when you look at this Broncos team, it's a team we discussed often in the offseason, right? Was this optimism founded? You had Russell Wilson with a ton of young talent on the offensive side of the football. Of course, Javonte Williams is now out for the year, and Melvin Gordon can't get playing time over Latavius Murray, and he is frustrated by it, and it seems rightfully so. But the question was for this Denver Broncos team, how would Nathaniel Hackett be in his first year as a head coach? I think we have a pretty dismal answer so far, but it's mainly Russell Wilson. Wilson, Joe. That's where it is. I expected the Broncos to maybe not live up to this hype of being a guaranteed 10-win team and making the postseason because of the change in head coach from Nathaniel Hackett to Vic Fangio. And because of how defensive-minded Vic Fangio is, maybe the Broncos taking a step back on that side of the football while the offense started to figure things out and maybe it not gelling too early on. The Broncos are still a top five scoring defense. They're still a top three total defense. They're really, really good on the defensive side of the football, just as they were a season ago. But Russell Wilson looks like a shell of himself. Russell Wilson looks like the worst commercial actor you have ever seen. The chef, is he cooking? Absolutely not. Russell Wilson is microwaving leftover Chinese food, Joe, that you order and you get some lo mein on a late Sunday night. That is the kind of cooking Russell Wilson is doing right now. It is abysmal. He is missing wide open receivers. It doesn't look like he is going through progressions, which is something at this stage, the 11th year of his NFL career, of course, that is what he is supposed to be able to do. Something is not clicking. I'm not sure if it's adapting to a new system with Nathaniel Hackett in a new environment. That is obviously going to lead to change. I'm not sure if Russell in his own abilities and that lat is truly hampering him to play at the best level that he can, but oh my goodness, it is disgusting to look at. The Broncos are the worst scoring offense in the National Football League. The Broncos are the worst scoring offense, Joe, in the National Football League, just averaging a tick above 15 points per game. The Bears have a better scoring offense than the Broncos. And they paid Russell Wilson a crap ton of money, $240 million, and extended him and gave him $165 million guaranteed. Joe, he's the second highest paid quarterback in the NFL. And this is your result? I think it's going to be a very difficult year in Denver.
Yeah, definitely. And here's the other thing, too. If that is the case where Russell Wilson is limited to any capacity due to the shoulder or any type of nagging injury, it's up to Nathaniel Hackett to devise a game plan to his strengths, right? Tendency. Okay, it's not working. We're not running the football. We're not getting first downs. We're going three and out on each and every down in the second half. Right. Change it up. Get some rhythm. Run some hurry up. Different formations.
For sure.
Do whatever it takes to win and score points. And that's where Nathaniel Hackett looks like a deer in the headlights. At the end of the day, look at two first-year head coaches. Brian Daboll for New York, right? Willing to roll the dice and understand the strengths and weaknesses of his team. And Nathaniel Hackett, that looks like he's definitely not qualified to be a head coach in the NFL. And at this point, not even a qualified OC. Maybe it was Aaron Rodgers that made him look all that well. I don't know how he got this job, but at the end of the day, this offense looks pedestrian. It looks like a high school football team. And again, it falls on him and it falls on the quarterback. And I don't want to see any more Russell Wilson videos. I don't want to see it, you know, him being goofy. At the end of the day, forget your TikTok, forget your brand, because your brand sucks right now. And what's more important is living up to the contract that you signed with the Denver Broncos.
Right now, Joe, I think Aaron Rodgers would want Nathaniel Hackett back in Green Bay because he's looking to simplify the offense, as the Packers have struggled now offensively the entirety of this year, getting upset by New York teams, being booked as a touchdown or greater favorite, and the Packers are just 3-3 straight up. But you bring up such a great point about Brian Daboll and what we are seeing right now out of Nathaniel Hackett. Really, it's just the best coaches in the sport at any level. They adjust to the talent they have on their roster. I don't think Brian Daboll would tell you right now at all, Joe, that Daniel Jones is the quarterback he would handpick. He wasn't part of the regime that had Danny Dimes in New York, but something's working. Are the Giants the most impressive team? Have the Giants blown out every opponent? Has it been ugly at times? Sure. Have they won 5 of their 6 games? 4 of those 5 outright as an underdog? Absolutely. It's adjusting to what you have right now, and I do think Nathaniel Hackett would have handpicked Russell Wilson to be the quarterback in this system, at least for them to work together to find some sort of cohesion and relationship to make this work. It is not right now. There is maybe one silver lining, Joe, if you have any belief in the Broncos being able to right the ship. Their 4 losses this year are by a combined 8 points. A field goal in overtime each of the past 2 weeks. 1 point on the road in Seattle that opening week of the year. And then as you looked at it as well, a pretty close loss. Or maybe it was a little bit more than 1 point. I don't know. We'll get back to it. But when you look at the Denver Broncos, Joe, a lot of close losses for Russell Wilson and the Broncos this year. It was a 9-point loss to the Las Vegas Raiders. So not just 8 points combined, but they have been very close margins for the Denver Broncos this year. But both of their wins also by 7 points or less. All right. As we continue to go around the NFL, Joe, there will be a lot of focus on quarterbacks this week. And we got some news for the Washington Commanders. Carson Wentz did injure his finger. He has a fractured finger and will be out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. That means it's Taylor Heinicke. Joe, you've said often, you've questioned the Commanders and how successful they will be this year. What does losing Carson Wentz do for your evaluation of Washington?
I think it's an upgrade going with Taylor Heinicke because the kid's a winner. He's gutty. At the end of the day, he's going to give it its best effort. Still think this is one of the worst teams in the NFL, but we'll see how it plays out, Ben.
Could it be a get-right spot for either of the two teams on Sunday outside the nation's capital? It's Green Bay visiting as a 5.5-point road favorite against the Commanders. We'll continue to look at some of those early lines with the news and notes in the NFL up next right here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back here on Football Full Circle, big news around the National Football League all week long. And Joe, as we just said, as we get ready for week 7, we were breaking down the injury to Carson Wentz for the Washington Commanders. Ron Rivera, the head coach in Washington, confirming just about 15 minutes ago, it will be Taylor Heinicke to get the start against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers at home this weekend. The rookie, Sam Howell, out of North Carolina, will serve as his backup. A potential there to see Sam Howell in his first bit of action. So, Joe, let's go through the National Football League and some big injury news and just some big news in general, all really surrounding the Arizona Cardinals. Marquise Hollywood Brown is going to be out for a substantial amount of time, about 1.5 months or 2 months. He suffered a foot injury late in the Cardinals' loss on the road in Seattle this past Sunday. It's a short turnaround for Arizona, but reinforcements are on the way for Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. First, a trade to acquire Robbie Anderson yesterday. What a quick turnaround, Joe, that was from when Robbie was kicked off the sidelines by interim head coach in Carolina, Steve Wilks, in the Panthers game in Los Angeles just a few days ago. He has now been traded to the desert. And on his way back, Joe, after serving a 6-game suspension to start 2022, the man known as Nuke, DeAndre Hopkins, will be back for Arizona Thursday night against the Saints as well. It's a short spread in the desert, Joe, only 1.5 points. The over-under stands at 44 in a hook. What do all of these acquisitions and newly added and acquired pieces for Arizona do in your mind, Joe?
They have to win now. I mean, at the end of the day, the pressure's on Cliff Kingsbury as well. We saw them start fast the last couple of seasons and tail off towards the end of the regular season. This year, they started slow, no D-hop. I get that. But Kyler Murray isn't earning his pay either. I mean, every half, he's under 100 yards. I understand the lack of weapons, but I'm not sold on Robbie Anderson being an elite wide receiver. He's more of a possession guy. He could be utilized, obviously, in terms of, you know, mismatches on nickelbacks. He's not a 4-2 burner. He's a big body that has a long wingspan and can catch the football. But at the end of the day, expecting him to take the top off the defense like a D-Hop or a Tyreek Hill, just not going to happen. Now, with both of those players in the lineup, what does that do to Kyler Murray? I hope that he becomes more aggressive. I hope that he can get back to his rare, you know, mid-season form, because right now he's just like Russell Wilson. I don't see the progressions. I don't see the confidence in knowing where he wants to go with the football. I see mental lapses, like where he took a slide on 3rd-and-1 or 3rd-and-2 and left his team a yard short and they missed a field goal. That can happen when you're paying a quarterback $400+ million to lead your team to a Super Bowl. That just can't happen. So we'll see. I would say the window is 2 games. You give him the New Orleans game with D-Hop, you give him the game after that. If the offense still isn't obviously humming after that, I would fire Kingsbury if they lose both of these games.
Joe, you said that Kingsbury is on that hot seat. Cliff said earlier this week, following the Cardinals' loss where they only scored 9 points against a Seattle defense that came in as the second worst scoring defense in the NFL, giving up over 28 points per game, that he would, if asked to do so, or if benefits Arizona, he would give up play calling abilities. It's never a good sign, Joe. It's always when you start to make changes to your organization, it means something deep down is not working, and that might be something that the Arizona Cardinals have to take into effect. So, the Cardinals, a 1.5-point favorite against those New Orleans Saints on Sunday. Joe, the Saints, just a 2-win football team so far this year, coming off another loss this past weekend at home against Joe Burrow in the Cincinnati Bengals. It's a Saints team, Joe, that there was some optimism because of what they added offensively, especially in that wide receiver room, that if Jameis Winston played good, clean football like he did for his first year before he got injured under Sean Payton, this could be a competitive team within the NFC. They're 2-4 right now. They're on the outside looking in terms of the playoff odds and where that stands, but they're only a game out of the divisional lead in the NFC South because of how bad the Bucs have been, and the Falcons tied for the top spot at 3-3. What is your evaluation, Joe, of what you have seen so far for New Orleans in the first year with Dennis Allen as the head coach in the Big Easy?
You know, we see it all the time where defensive-minded head coaches take over the full responsibility and the defense isn't as dominant that they were right a year ago. Let's not forget, with Taysom Hill, they shut down Tom Brady. That was the type of defense that they have. Now, granted, there's some injuries to the secondary, but at the end of the day, I don't think this is the same, you know, game-changing type of defense. They're not forcing turnovers consistently. They're wearing down later in ball games, and we're seeing, I want to say, average to mediocre quarterbacks, and I'm not talking last week with Joe Burrow, but average to mediocre quarterbacks like Marcus Mariota challenge them over the top from week one. So at the end of the day, I mean, if your defense gives way, what do you really have in terms of an offensive mind or a philosophy? Because at the end of the day, that team was built by Sean Payton. You have Andy Dalton, an aging quarterback. Jameis Winston's banged up. The Kamara came on. If the running game could come on, he had a 99 yards last week. If they can run the football, maybe they can establish an identity, but right now they don't have one. You know, and the fact that they don't have an identity, you would think that the defense would carry them. That's not the case, and that's why they're losing ball games, Ben.
Yeah. And that's what we're seeing right now, because it was a top 10 defensive unit each of the past 2 years with Dennis Allen as the defensive coordinator. I'll put my hand up, Joe. I thought this Saints team would have some of that continuity with him remaining as the head coach and what that could mean. But I think we see how good of a head coach Sean Payton is, and that significant drop-off in a new era for the New Orleans Saints. But the benefit here for New Orleans and for teams in the NFC West and the AFC North, Joe, those three divisions, all with all four teams at 500 or below. So the Saints are not dead by any means. They can make up some ground in this division. That is the same in the NFC West. It is the same in the AFC North. So, Joe, as we get some more news around the National Football League, getting ready for week number 7, Sunday Night Football will pit the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Miami Dolphins in South Beach. It's a 7-point spread in favor of Miami. Tua Tagovailoa has cleared concussion protocol. He's expected to get the start against the Steelers. On the other side, Kenny Pickett, the rookie QB for Pittsburgh, in concussion protocol. It seems more than likely, Joe, we'll see Mitchell Trubisky get the start against the Finns. With some quarterback uncertainty here, Joe, what is your approach to this matchup early in this week between the Steelers and the Dolphins on Sunday night?
I think it's a bad matchup for Pittsburgh. Now, you remember I said I like Pittsburgh with the points at home against Tampa Bay, right? I thought they were just ripe. They could keep it low scoring. They did. They didn't run the football all that effectively with Najee Harris. He had like 42 yards, but they were able to run it enough. And Trubisky obviously is a big upgrade coming off the bench. He's a veteran and led that comeback. This is a bad matchup, in my opinion, going up against the wide receivers of the Miami Dolphins. I think they're going to challenge them over the top early and often. I think they're going to look to strike fast and force Trubisky and that team to match them score for score, and that's not the way they're built this year in terms of Pittsburgh. I think their defense is banging where they were last year, where they were suspecting a lot of ball games, right? I know they stepped up against Tom Brady, but again, at the end of the day, I still think Miami's schemes and speed can challenge them over the top. I think they roll here. I think this is a game that Miami wins anywhere from 14 to 17 points.
It's going to be, Joe, I think, a really, really difficult test for the Pittsburgh Steelers and how banged up that secondary is against this good Dolphins team. And, Joe, now the Dolphins, who started the year 3-0, they were the last remaining undefeated team in the AFC, have dropped three straight with that rotating cast and crew at quarterback due to the injury to Tua Tagovailoa. And then Teddy Bridgewater goes down. And then Skylar Thompson goes down. So Teddy comes back in after clearing concussion protocol. With Tua now back in the fold, Joe, what is the outlook for the Dolphins, in your opinion, the rest of the way?
Well, now you open up the playbook again, right? You had to condense it in terms of with Skylar Thompson at the helm. It got a little bit difficult because you couldn't utilize all the looks and formations because he is a rookie. With Tua, you have to open it up. Even though it's his first game back, this is a must-win for the Miami Dolphins to get back into the wild card, to get back into the playoff race. Even though they're 500 and they had a little bit of breathing room, you know, we saw what happened with Carolina last year. 3-0. No, they fell off a cliff. You do not want that with Mike McDaniel. Obviously, he has to open it up and utilize every option. I would feed Jalen Waddle, feed Gesicki, let all those guys eat Tyreek Hill. If Pittsburgh is up to snuff, let them shut us down. But I'm going hurry up. I'm getting to it into a rhythm early, and I'm looking to jump up on that offense that right now is just one-dimensional and methodical under Mitch Trubisky.
Joe, a very strange phenomenon happening in the AFC South. The Colts and the Titans will play each other for the second time in 3 weeks. It will be Indianapolis's fifth divisional game already. They play six in the division all year, and Indy will have already played five. They're a 2.5-point road underdog, Joe, in Tennessee. This is a really big game for the division because Tennessee went on the road to Indy just 2 weekends ago and won that football game outright as an underdog. Now it's Colts that have the opportunity to return the favor. Joe, could the AFC South be decided already in the middle of October?
It's possible, and I'm sticking with Tennessee. I think they're the more consistent team. I know they got off to a slow start, but I have no confidence in Matt Ryan. I know he played well and led the comeback, or Frank Reich. At the end of the day, I believe in Derrick Henry. I believe in the physicality of the offensive line, and I still like their Tennessee defense over Indy right now, so I would lay it. I will say this. I think the over does come in, though.
It's a short total as well, 42.5. Is that number. All right, we're going to flip our attention from the National Football League to week number 8 of this college football season and a couple of big picture conversations around CFB. Stay with us here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are back on Football Full Circle. We flip our attention to college football because 2 weeks from this Tuesday, Joe, we will have the first unveiling of the season of the college football playoff rankings. The CFP selection committee will tell us how they see this college football season playing out. So we'll use this time, Joe, in the build-up to week number 8, following all that we saw in a wonderful week 7, because of how impactful it was, Joe, in so many good matchups, teams that were playing each other ranked inside the top 10, inside the top 15, inside the top 25, there was going to be so much movement. And some of those odds have come out once again. So, Joe, let's start with the biggest story, of course, and that would be Tennessee's upset on Rocky Top against Alabama. The Volunteers winning outright as an 8.5-point underdog. The Tide penalized heavily in that game. There's 66 penalties this year, the most at the FBS level. You got to think Nick Saban not too pleased with that. But, Joe, it's such a fascinating thing, right? That will be a moment we remember from this season. That will be a top five moment. The scenes at Rocky Top, Tennessee snapping the 15-year losing skid, beating Alabama and puffing the victory cigars for the first time since 2006. Nobody will ever be able to take away the images we saw on Saturday night. But as it comes to crowning a national champion and a conference champion, there is a very realistic possibility, Joe. The Volunteers don't even have the opportunity to play for an SEC title. Why do I say that? Well, let's look at the conference odds to begin. Georgia remains the favorite, Joe, at plus 100, even money to win the SEC. Alabama is plus 145, the second best price, despite the fact the Tide have lost. Tennessee, plus 650. The Vols still unbeaten. Ole Miss, another unbeaten team, Joe. They're 19-1 to win the SEC with the fourth best price. So, Joe, I ask you, will Tennessee play in the SEC championship game, or will the Volunteers miss the conference title game altogether?
I think they're going to miss it. They're already 11.5-point underdogs November 5th on some books here in New Jersey. That game is November 5th. It's ironically the same weekend that Alabama-LSU square off. That game will probably be a night game if LSU picks up the win against Ole Miss this weekend. So things will really take shape over the next couple of weeks because, like I said, we have an elimination game, LSU and Ole Miss. And don't count LSU. I know it sounds crazy. 80-1, but guess what? They control their destiny. They play Ole Miss. They play Alabama. They pick up both of those wins, even though it might seem out of the realm of possibility. Guess what? They're in the driver's seat in terms of the SEC West. So everything will take form and take shape over the next couple of weeks. We have to see how it, in fact, does play out. But I don't think Tennessee is the best team in the East. I still believe that's the Georgia Bulldogs from an offensive and defensive line perspective. But again, they're going to play that game in 2 weeks, and we'll see who's victorious and who's standing in the end.
And right now, Joe, before even that, Tennessee this week has UT Martin. Okay, good win there. Tennessee then the following Saturday at home in Neyland hosts Kentucky. That's going to be most likely, Joe, a top 20, a top 15 tilt when the Cats head to Knoxville. And with Will Levis, like we saw this past weekend, Kentucky's a very different team than they are without him. When they got knocked out of the game against Ole Miss, that was their first loss of the season, and then followed that up with a second consecutive loss without Will Levis for the entirety of the game against South Carolina. But with him in there, Joe, and how good the defense is under Mark Stoops, they are not a team that Tennessee is going to be able to take lightly. I expect that spread to probably be somewhere around a touchdown, if not less than that number by the time we get to next weekend in Knoxville. With that being said, Joe, you mentioned it. That early look-ahead line is already there for Saturday, November 5th, the first Saturday in November in Athens. The game is in Athens between the hedges for Georgia. They are already a 10.5-point favorite, and that line is on the move at certain places. Already people backing the Dogs, Joe. Not to say Tennessee can't pull off the upset. They certainly have the offense to challenge this Georgia defense. And does Georgia offensively have enough to keep up? I would say so at this point. But, Joe, already you can see that the path for Tennessee to even play in the SEC championship game, to even have the opportunity to qualify for the college football playoff, is going to be very, very tough sledding.
Oh, absolutely. And I go to that Kentucky game as being the one. Don't count out the Cats because they right. handed Tennessee their first loss in terms of Knoxville since 1984 when they played during the COVID year. Last year, it was a three-point game. They exchanged touchdowns. I mean, it was a 90-point game. I think it was 45-42 in favor of Tennessee. They were a short dog in that ballgame. So at the end of the day, yeah, Will Levis, just think about this. You have Hendon Hooker, the potential Heisman second right there behind C.J. Stroud, right? He's a contender. He's a front runner right now. And then you have possibly, according to some, Mel Kiper and others, that the number one pick from the quarterback perspective in right. terms of Will Levis in the upcoming draft. So that game is not going to be easy for Tennessee, especially with a potential look ahead with the Georgia Bulldogs the following week. You need to take care of business with the Kentucky Wildcats. And we know Kentucky's a gutty road team and an opportunity secondary. So we'll see how that game plays out. I am curious to see where both offenses are and defenses are at that point in a couple weeks because it's a 7 o'clock game in Neyland, and I'll tell you what, that's going to be a barn burner as well.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. That will not be a spot that Tennessee just sails in unbeaten still to take on Georgia. What Tennessee has working for them this year is they are 5-1 against the number in their 6 outright victories. The only time they did not cover was against the Florida team when the Gators came back in that football game. But Joe, that leads us to the next point here as we lay out the path in the SEC for Tennessee, for Alabama, and for Georgia. The Tide still favored, at least based on those odds. We don't have divisional odds up as of yet, but Bama by far the shortest number out of teams from the SEC West. So despite the loss so far this season, Joe, Alabama is expected to be back in the SEC championship game. So let's play out the scenario we did yesterday. Let's say Georgia beats Tennessee, the Volunteers' first loss. Georgia goes to the SEC championship game undefeated. They take on a one-loss Alabama team like they did last year, and Bama pulls off what would probably be an upset by the odds and beats Georgia in the SEC title game. Now you have 3 one-loss teams from the SEC that have all beaten one another. Alabama loses to Tennessee. Tennessee loses to Georgia. Georgia loses to Alabama. It's why, Joe, a lot of people are laying out a path right now for 3 SEC teams potentially to make the college football playoff. And it's not the craziest thought, although it would be absolutely insane to actually see play out, because when you look at the odds right now, Joe, 3 of the top 6 prices to win a national championship hail from the SEC. Georgia, the second best price, plus 190. Alabama, the third best price still at plus 450. And Tennessee rounds out that top 6, Joe, at 20-1. Then there's a $30 drop-off even to an unbeaten UCLA, an unbeaten TCU team, and Oregon, who squares off against the Bruins this weekend. So, Joe, that's how things are laying out right now, and it is an interesting conversation. I don't think we see 3 SEC teams, but it's not outside of the realm of possibility at this moment.
And you know why? Because there's no group of 5 this year, right? I think that's another reason why. Because there's no Cincinnati, there's no Boise State, UCF. That happened last year, and we saw what happened when Brian Robinson ran all over Cincinnati's front 7. So at the end of the day, we know the committee is not going to even account for a group of 5, even if there was one that's undefeated, that's worthy, right, from a schedule perspective. So take that out. So that leads the argument, oh, yeah, you can have 3 SEC teams. I would buy into that scenario if you told me that the conference champions of potentially the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have one loss. If they're undefeated, it's not happening in any capacity, along with Clemson as well. Meaning if you have an undefeated Clemson, you have an undefeated Ohio State, right?
Yeah.
There's no way 3 SEC teams are getting in to the college football playoff with one loss. It's just not happening.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it really needs to see. We need to know the whole picture. You gave us half, right, in the sense of if that scenario happens, we need to understand what happens in the other Power 5 conferences to buy into that bet. And until you know that, there's no way I would recommend doing that. It would have to be, think about that. You would need Ohio State to lose to Penn State or Michigan, right? And then what about Michigan, though? What if they're undefeated? So you have two teams, yeah. right? And then the Pac-12 has UCLA if they run the table. So the Pac-12 a little bit less than the Big Ten right now, but the Big Ten has two options along with Clemson. That's rolling right now unless your Cuse take care of business. That scenario can't happen with three SEC teams.
Certainly so, Joe, and that's a wonderful point. That is one side of the equation. You would need pure chaos and havoc to happen everywhere else in college football. Because if I would even say, Joe, screw undefeated, if there's a one-loss ACC and a one-loss Big Ten champ and their names are Ohio State, Michigan, or Clemson, you're not going to get in three SEC teams. If there's a one-loss Big 12 champion, I think that is a much more difficult path. Because again, the College Football Playoff Selection Committee can do whatever they want. And they have shown that time and again. They don't follow a strict set of guidelines in making their final decisions, ultimately. But one thing they have showed us, Joe, over the eight-year history now of deciding a national champion from the College Football Playoff in the four-team format is conference championships at the Power 5 level mean more than anything. And so you would only have in that scenario, Joe, in the SEC three-headed monster with all three of those teams, Bama, Georgia and Tennessee, all with one loss, you would only have Alabama in the one we laid out as the one-loss conference champion. Now, it would be very difficult to keep the other two teams out, but if you have one-loss Power 5 conference champions across the board, it is going to make that path for the SEC, not to just get three teams, Joe, but to get two teams into the College Football Playoff, that much more difficult. You would need help. You would need the Big 12 to probably have Texas win it as a two-loss conference champion. You would need a two-loss Pac-12 champion, which seems like it might happen right now. You would need Clemson to take a step back or Ohio State to take a step back. You would need chaos in the Big 10. But right now, Joe, Ohio State is minus 370 to win the Big 10. Clemson is minus 550 to win the ACC. If they cash those very heavy odds on favored prices, I think both of those schools, Joe, make their way to the College Football Playoff without a sliver of a doubt.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, they're looking for, you know, nation recognition. What I mean, West Coast, East Coast, they want everybody to buy in, not just the Southeastern Conference fans. And even though the product might be great and the games might be unbelievable from a competitive standpoint, from a sponsorship standpoint and just a viewership standpoint, they would gain so much more if they had a Pac-12, a Big Ten champion in there along with Clemson and one SEC team. It just makes the viewership that much more appealing, and that's what brings in the money, right?
Absolutely so. It's a really, really good point, Joe. It sounds so matter-of-fact, right? It sounds so cut and dry, so black and white, but Lisi's spot on, especially in this changing time of what the College Football Playoff is going to look like, either next year, the year after, or certainly by the time we get to 2026, because we know the College Football Playoff is going to expand. And if for some reason three SEC teams make it this year, Joe, we're going to see expansion to 12 teams starting next year in 2023 if you have those one-loss or undefeated scenarios within the other Power 5 conferences. So it's time to look at what might happen in the Pac-12 because havoc could be coming. Complete chaos could be coming to the Conference of Champions this Saturday in Eugene, Oregon. We break it down up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Football Full Circle and all across the Sports Grid Radio Network. We are Ben Stevens and Joe Lisi bringing you FFC live right here all across the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM, channel 159. So, Lisi, we mentioned it leading into the break. Pac-12 chaos potentially, or maybe some certainty, come Saturday afternoon. Autzen Stadium in Eugene awaits. It is the stage for 10th-ranked Oregon hosting 9th-ranked UCLA. Joe, this line, intriguing to me. Already at 6 in favor of the Ducks, and the total makes it seem like we are going to see a very high-scoring affair. It's 70 and a half. Joe, the early approach to this game, in your mind, is what?
is I'm sticking with my guns, and I believe UCLA is the better team. From the series perspective, Oregon's won three straight by 9 points per game, and we understand the good Bo Nix versus the bad Bo Nix on the road, but this game is going to come down to the interior line. Which more quarterback do you believe into more? I think it's DTR, and which coach you think is going to have his team best prepared on a bye? I think that's Chip Kelly over Dan Lanning.
Joe, here's my thing about this game, right? I'm trying to decide in my own mind, not from what I'm hearing elsewhere, what you will say, the analysis and insight that you bring so spectacularly on College Football Today, or what our good friend Kevin Walsh might say. I'm trying to decide, am I still stuck up on Oregon in the way they played early this year, especially that season opening trouncing at the hands of Georgia, 49-3, and looking shaky at times on the road against Wazoo? Am I still hung up on that, or has there been enough improvement for Oregon in my mind to be a 6-point favorite, even at home in Autzen, which is one of the toughest places to play in all of college football? That's what I'm still trying to figure out, because Oregon has the 8th best total offense in the country now, averaging 512 yards per game, and they have scored 41 or more in all 5 of their games since that season opening loss to Georgia. Plenty more to come all week long on Football Full Circle, but we're done for today. Keep it locked right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store at Lowe's.com for details.